Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go! What's going on, everybody? Thank y'all for joining us on this episode of Gramlich and McLean. I'm very excited about this guest for this episode, a guy I've gotten to know very well over the past 2 years, and happy to call him a great friend, the one and only EJ Manuel.
As most college football fans will remember, Mac, EJ was one of the most productive quarterbacks in Florida State history and led the Seminoles to a 25-6 record as a starter. Following his career at Florida State, EJ went on to be a first-round pick by the Buffalo Bills.
But of course, Kelly, he's most recognized for his amazing work on ACC Network as an analyst with The Huddle and co-host of In Play with Kelsey Riggs. We really enjoyed having EJ on the show. Here we go. EJ, my brother, thanks for joining us today, my man. I appreciate it.
E-Mac, Kelly, so happy to be on the podcast. Very proud of what y'all are doing and excited to be here today.
Well, we appreciate that, EJ, and we're excited to have you on. And we were kind of planning out the guests and trying to have former student athletes first and foremost, and people that we know and people that, of course, we're friends with. But also we're trying to relate it to a big game that's happening that week. So we know we have Clemson, Florida State this week. We'll talk about that in a second. Let's start with quarterbacks, though. We've had, Hasselbeck is our only other quarterback, right, E-Mac? So we've had
a
lot
of... We're on a run of skill players, two quarterbacks in a row.
We had a lot of O-linemen to start.
Can't go wrong with getting quarterbacks on there anytime.
So the second smartest people on the field minus O-linemen. That's right.
I knew that was coming.
We had two O-linemen to start, and I was like, Mac, are we only going to talk to O-linemen? Like, is this it? So we're excited to have quarterbacks, of course. And let's just start with some of these quarterbacks in the league, EJ, because right now the quarterback depth in this league is really, really impressive. As a guy who played in the league, well, in the ACC and the league, the NFL, you know a little something about QBs. So Trevor Lawrence, first and foremost, I think a lot of people just assume he's going to be the number one pick. What do you see from him that makes him that can't miss prospect?
I think the way he handles himself is what's going to really make teams drool. And what I mean by that is, you know, even when the COVID stuff came out, you know, he was calm, he's collected. When they lose a game, he's calm and collected. When they win a game, he's calm and collected. He's the same guy on camera every time you see him out there. And I haven't got a chance to personally meet him. I know you two probably know him better than I do, being Clemson alums. But just from my look at him, he just seems like he has it all together. And, of course, he's not perfect. I'm sure he has his own personal life. But, you know, even the fact that he's getting married soon is something that's going to help teams feel more comfortable and calm, you know, bringing him and paying him, you know, $40+ million as a rookie fresh out of college. I think that's something that teams look at to see if a guy is going to be consistent. And I just feel like Trevor has all the intangibles off the field that's going to make him a number one pick. Obviously on the field, I mean, his game is flawless. His accuracy, his speed, his touch. He can throw every single type of pass you could ask for. And he's been in tough situations even as a freshman, you know, to come in and lead and go out and win a national championship, get back there the following year, came up short, but still played great. And even this year, continued to play at even a higher clip, you know, passing for 70% completion percentage on the season thus far. So it's not really anything that you can nitpick about his game. And if you are nitpicking, you're just trying to be annoying. You know what I mean? Like, his game is pretty flawless. He's clean. I would say he's probably as clean as Andrew Luck, and maybe even a step above or ahead of Lucky back then, you know what I mean? So I'm excited to see what happens. I think him and Justin Fields will probably be 1A and 1B in this draft. It's just a matter of which team, you know, likes which guy or wants each guy.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear you say that, E, just about how, you know, safe he is. That's the same thing Hasselbeck said. He's just a safe prospect, the guy that you can bet on. That bust factor, it's just not there because of what he does intangible-wise, the measurables that he has. He's going to be a great pro. And like you said, with Ohio State's quarterback as well, I think those two guys, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, it's funny how they've kind of been in sync literally their whole careers. Like since they were freshmen in high school, those guys have been fighting for number one, number two in you know, ESPN rankings, now in college, and then eventually in the pros. So it's interesting to see. I want to move to another guy in the ACC that really statistically has just had just crazy numbers these last two or three games. and Sam Howell. What are some things that you've seen from him growth-wise from year, you know, 1 to 2, and then some things that he needs to even grow further on going into his junior year before he takes that next step if he decides to go to the NFL a year from now?
Yeah, I think the beauty for Sam Howell is he has weapons. He has 2 great running backs, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams. He has 3 great receivers, really 4, because you could throw in Shafi Brown, Bo Corrales, Daz Newsome, and Deami Brown. So he has a ton of weapons, and I think that's, you know, maybe 40% of being a really good quarterback. If you got weapons, you know, like I've seen guys be on a team where they had the weapons and they weren't that good, but they looked like they were better than they were. They go to a team where they don't have those weapons and they kind of like expose. That's just what it is. That's the lay of the land sometimes. But for Sam, I feel like he has those weapons around him, so it gives him more confidence to try to take shots. Even in that game yesterday, or that game versus Wake Forest, it was just cool to see how, you know, he didn't mind taking those deep balls down the field. I mean, he just ran back with his shoulder up, just letting it ride, you know, throwing.
Right.
Anytime you see a quarterback doing this, guys, and that's with the shoulders, he probably throw that thing about 60 yards. And so, you know, his accuracy is good. I think one thing for him to grow, or one area to grow, is just, you know, decision making. And he's gotten away with making big plays, kind of freaky plays, so often that there's times where he really should just make the right play, and that's throwing the ball out of bounds, or that's running and getting and sliding for 3 yards. You know, I'm not a huge fan of him trying to run guys over. He's too important to his team. And once he gets to maybe even next year as a junior, but for sure once he gets to the next level where he's making money playing quarterback, you know, the offensive coordinator is like, hey, man, we're here for this. We need this. You know
right. what I mean? Like,
we don't need you trying to truck guys and be a hero. We need you to be available every Sunday. So that's part of learning and it's part of being young. But overall, I think he's the next guy up in this conference, along with, you know, De'Aaron King, you know, those guys that possibly, well, De'Aaron might come out this year, but, you know, I think he's definitely that next dude once Trevor moves on, and obviously with DJ probably stepping in for Trevor.
That weight game for Howell, just absolutely ridiculous. He was in the zone. And one thing I like about Howell, I want to ask you about a few more QBs, EJ, but do you think Howell kind of has that Trevor Lawrence factor? Because I've seen Howell gets pumped up occasionally, but I don't really see him get rattled that much.
Yeah, I agree, Kelly. I think that's one cool part about both of those guys is that they're men of faith, and you hear them speak about that. You know, they talk about, you know, this is, you know, glory to God, or, you know, I'm just thankful for my teammates. I'm thankful for my coaches. I'm thankful for, you know, the ability to play football. And when you hear guys say that, they're Christians, you know. So I think that also is why they're grounded. You know, I think people would try to shy away from being real about that. Like, nah, that's probably why they're so calm. That's probably why they have that confidence.
No doubt.
And, you know, you all can agree with that, you know, and I think that's the biggest part about Sam and Trevor is that they're true to who they are and they don't change for anybody, which I think is really cool. So, you know, Sam is, and Emac has said this too, we've all said that he has ice water in his veins, and he showed that even as a freshman last year in some pressure situations where, you know, the game was really in his hands and Mac Brown let him be in control of it. And they didn't try to run the ball. They tried to throw it. And a lot of times he was able to win those games with his arm.
He was, definitely. I see some similarities there with their demeanor. And then one guy who's really emerged, especially the last 2 weeks, Ian Book. Ian Book has kind of, I'm not going to say come out of nowhere, because we all know who he was, but he hasn't really been playing like he has the last couple weeks, at least in the first part of the season. The way he's been scrambling, the decision-making, that kind of stuff. What have you seen from Ian Book recently? Has he blown you away like he has me and Mac?
You know, he has. I think Ian's, it's hard to say because, you know, there's been times where I'm like, I don't know. There's times where I think he, you know, average. And then there's other times where I think he's above average. And there's other times where I think he's excellent, you know? So I think, not to say he's a hard case to figure out, but I just feel like sometimes the play calling may not be something that makes him. That's why I say, like, Trevor and Sam, I think they have the opportunity to make big plays because the coaches, you know, they call it up for those guys. But like early in the season, the halfway point for Notre Dame, Tommy Reese just wasn't calling aggressive games for Ian to chuck it downfield. And then when he did have chances to chuck it downfield, you can tell he just wasn't trying to throw a pick, or he wasn't trying to be loose with the football. So he'd hit a drag route, he'd take off and run for 5 yards. But in these pressure situations, I think that's where you judge quarterbacks, and pressure situation was versus Clemson. And he performed. He did an excellent job running the football, throwing the football. His decision-making was on point. His leadership was there. And again, also that cool moxie demeanor, cool, calm, and collected that you want to see from a quarterback. I think he's a pro as well. I can't say he'll be a day one starter guy, but I do think he'll have a good career in the NFL, especially coming from a storied program like Notre Dame.
Yeah, and again, I think just seeing the growth from him, because you're absolutely right, it's been a little inconsistent, if not a lot inconsistent, and just to start the season at least, it is not what we expected to see from a three-year starter, a fifth-year guy. You know, I expected to see much more ownership, control, and whether it's play calling, whether it's confidence in throwing the ball downfield, you know, I'm not sure, but, you know, certainly these last 2 weeks, he's really picked it up. Let's stay in the ACC real quick. Number two, Notre Dame. Number four, Clemson. I think Miami has slid to 12 now. Are those kind of the teams, you know, coming into the season? Did you think those would be the three teams ranked? And I guess who has been the biggest surprise to you in the ACC, whether it's, you know, positive or negative?
So I think we all felt like Louisville had a good chance to be ranked, or at least in the top 25 rankings. And I would say Pitt was another team I thought would be ranked or up there with, you know, Clemson, Carolina, Notre Dame, and Miami. So, you know, I thought possibly we'd have five teams in the top 25. And, you know, I think at one point we had four, maybe, something like that. So overall, I think the biggest disappointment is Louisville. I would say Pitt wasn't necessarily disappointing because they lost some of those games by 1 or 3 points. I think they have two extra wins on their record. And then I would say surprise team in a positive way, though, has been Boston College. I think BC with Phil Jurkovec, obviously Coach Hafley getting that defense right. I think they've been really good. I like what I'm seeing from them. I think they'll be really good next year and the year after. But then also Carolina, just kind of a, you know, when you lose to Florida State, who's obviously on a down year, you lose to Virginia, who's, you know, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. That's where I would say, can't say it's a disappointment, maybe more of a surprise, more of a letdown. Than anything else.
It's a tough way to talk about Carolina, because to say they're a disappointment, we're kind of forgetting they just won 7 games last year, right? So we were expecting a lot from them. But I would say underwhelmed, that's kind of where I would go with Carolina.
I agree. Yeah, I think we just expect – I mean, I expected them to play for the championship. They championship along with Clemson. So I think they have that type of team. They have that type of skill players. Those types of skill players, quarterback, obviously. So I was expecting them to take that next step, and maybe they do it as, you know, as juniors next year. You know, it'd be cool if one of those guys, one of those seniors, like, for example, De'Ami Brown, probably could go to the NFL this year if he decided to come back, try to win the championship next year. I mean, that'd be pretty cool with all the rules that we have now when guys can come back and, you know, get another year. So who knows what'll happen, but I do think that was one major team where I was like, man, I just – you know, one, two, or three things that just kind of caused them not to be where I thought they would be this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And I was same way. I was thinking playoff, two ACC teams. You know, I just really thought that we saw a foundation that would take a big enough step. And maybe that was unfair of us. But when you look at the way that Mac Brown was pumping those guys out in the media, just, you know, really celebrating, this is what we have back. This is the kind of team. It was kind of like we were drinking the Kool-Aid that he was providing. And, you know, I think just anything short of a championship would be looked at as kind of a disappointment if you allow yourself to do that. And when you really reel it in, like we just discussed, you know, they still have a possibility to have a pretty good year. And if those guys come back, like you said, you know, look out next year.
Yeah, I mean, we had every reason to drink the Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? Because it's over last year, and even on a few games, for one, you go to the wire with Clemson, number one, number two team in the country last year, you know. You go and you blow out a few teams that most of us didn't think you would blow out. So I just feel like what they showed offensively, and again, I think their biggest woe has been their defense. You know,
for
they
sure.
Put up 600 yards, 700 yards offense, and they also give up about 400, 500 yards too. You know what I mean? They did that versus Wake Forest as well. So if they can get that defense fixed, maybe get one or two more guys to add to that and really start locking people down, that's when we'll see Carolina start to look like Clemson, start to look like Notre Dame, how they're looking this year. So I think that's where they're missing.
And let's be clear, none of us know anything about defense. So
that's right.
It's tough. You know, I hated
EJ defense. Actually likes defense more than you and I
so
do.
EJ, you may like defense, but you are a quarterback at heart. Yeah. Mac and I are pretty anti-defense just in general life.
So it's funny, and if you have another quarterback on your pod, he'll probably say the same if you ask him this question. We learn more about defense. We learn offense, but we learn more about defense the higher you get because
that's right.
They're so freaking good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And It's not even necessarily the skilled players. It's just the schemes. That's why when I see guys like Venables, when he's drawing up stuff, and you know this, like, I love that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's so cool to see how they choreograph and how they get, you know, leverage on linemen and chip a shoulder, and then a guy comes off his butt and he gets to a, you know, a free path to the quarterback. I like that kind of stuff.
So. Just clean, nice football.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And I see them walk through it. You know what I mean? Like, they choreograph and literally, like, go through, there's drills where, like, there's just walkthroughs and they just watch them boom, boom. Or say, huh? And I used to, when I was a scout team quarterback and my fourth year, you know, I would be doing scout team for the defense and I would just watch them go through their blitz schemes, and Rex would love that stuff. And so it kind of made me have an appreciation for it. So I was on a tangent, but I do love defense for everybody that's listening.
I like that, EJ. And, you know, we try to have people who have different points of view than Mac and I on the podcast.
You know, it's funny. We have yet to have a defender on this podcast, which I was looking at the guests. We might not have one lined up.
Yeah.
All offense.
I'm trying to think who you could call. I mean,
defense is stupid. It's simple.
Championships, though. We all know that. You know what I mean?
Defense. Okay.
Championships.
I was just thinking of this.
Like a D lineman. Get like a middle linebacker or a
right. Somebody nasty yes. Dude. Yeah.
Not to say the linemen aren't smart, but
we get Mark Herzlick on here. That would be a good one.
Herzlick smart dude. Those guys gonna tell you, like Beast. Like me and Beast would have conversations talking about stuff and. I'll get it.
Bro, we would get him so mad talking about the RPO.
Oh, he hates it because it puts a linebacker like him in a bind. You know,
right.
He can't do anything.
Lose.
Down the field blocking, you come up, they throw a slant off your ear, it's a touchdown. So I get it.
Sam Howell that's kind of his bread and butter too. Speaking of that, EJ, just this is very quick tangent as we're talking about offensive defense. If you had to choose, let's say. Take yourself out of the situation as a QB, just as a watching a team as a fan. Would you rather have an elite offense or an elite defense?
Well, all right, I gotta ask a second question before.
Okay.
Is my offense terrible, or you know what I'm saying? Like, is the other terrible, or are they just okay? Like, are they serviceable?
They're serviceable. Serviceable.
I'll say an elite defense.
Boo! We're hanging up right now. This interview's over.
To be fair, Mac. I mean, go ahead.
Serviceable offense that necessarily, for example, I'm going to use, I don't want to say serviceable. Right. You know what I mean? Where a team where like they're not pretty, they're not going to put up 300-400 yards every game, but they're serviceable. They take care of the ball. They convert on third down. They score touchdowns when your defense, which is elite, gives you these turnovers and gives you more opportunities with football. So, if I'm a coach, I want my defense to be elite because if I know I can hold teams to 10, 14 points a game, all I need my offense to do is score 17 to 21 points a game, and we have a good shot of winning. So,
and that's why he's going to be an elite head coach one day, and I will never be that because I'm too much offense.
I don't have the patience to coach, y'all. That's my right now. I'm young like y'all, so I feel like when I'm older, I definitely won't have the patience kids that think they know everything, trying to teach them something, and they're like, oh, man, like, all right, bro, go ahead. Everybody doing the same touchdown dances and all this kind of stuff. Come on, man. Weird time.
Kids, youths these days, as the old people we are. Okay, EJ, let's talk a little Florida State because we're having you on Clemson FSU week. And, you know, EJ, I used to love Clemson FSU week. I mean, I still do. I'm excited. It's going to be a great week. It's a great week to be alive. But it's just tough. You know what I mean? So I'm sure you get tired of talking about Florida State right now because I'm sure you get asked just walking down the street, right? Like, what's going on with FSU? When are we going to be back, et cetera? What are your thoughts on what's going on with FSU right now?
Well, my first thought is we have to get better players. I think the Clemsons, the Miamis, the Georgia Techs, the Indianas, the Marylands, the Michigans have been getting kids that are from Florida that we used to get at Florida State. When I watch games now, on Sundays, I try to watch back the other games that we don't get a chance to see in the ACC. And a lot of these kids are from Pahokee. They're from West Palm. They're from Tallahassee. They're from Miami, you know. And I understand there's a lot of kids out there, but they're good players. And I just feel like Florida State hasn't been able to get the top notch from their backyard anymore. You know, it seems like y'all's alma mater has been, you know, taken. And I think that's why the program's where it's at. I feel like the size, the speed that we once had, at Florida State isn't there. I think the fear factor at Florida State, no one really fears the spear anymore. No team goes in there and is, you know, shaking in their boots when they get into Doak Campbell. I feel like now they actually walk in like, all right, you know, I'm about to show out in Tallahassee, you know, on ABC or on, you know, national TV. So I think that's the mystique. And I said this last night, the mystique of FSU is kind of taking a hit. And, you know, the only way to get that back, you got to win football games. And when I got there, we were average. And I think the way we got that mystique and that fear back, we just worked our tails off. You know, obviously we grew in stature. Like we wanted to be big and we wanted to be mean and we wanted to be fast. And I felt like that's what we did. And, you know, I think these guys now are kind of riding off of, oh yeah, when Jameis or when EJ or when Christian Ponder was there. Nah, we got to do it when you're there. It's your team. It's your Florida State now. And I think that's where they're missing it.
Yeah. How close is it, E? And should people be freaking out? I mean, are we talking about a quarterback away, a position player away, or do you think this is a couple of years? We need to keep building and get this thing right.
Man, E, that's a great question. I think it's a couple of years. And I say because there's no dominant force that jumps out to me when you watch them play. Like there's no position group that I'm like, oh my God, like, yeah, the linebackers or, oh, the tackles on the team or, oh, the D-line is so amazing. I can't point at one position group that makes me feel like, okay, that's what we need to build around. I think it's just a complete rebuild for Novell. And I do feel bad for him, man. I mean, all that he's dealt with this season, and I'm not there internally. I've only spoken to him, you know, two or three occasions. Always seemed like a great person. And even when he speaks to, you know, on TV, seems like a great guy. But it's just, you know, been a rough year for him. Obviously the whole football program, but for him to have COVID, to deal with these, you know, the implications of COVID, your team, and, you know, talking about the COVID rules, players calling you out, players leaving the program, players transferring. Yeah. It's a lot going on. And I feel for him. So I'm sure he probably wishes he might have stayed in Memphis one or two more years, maybe, not knowing what he was going to walk into. But I do think they're about a year, 2 years away, maybe two or three recruiting classes away from getting back to where they used to be.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And still, I think Norvell's the guy for the job. It sounds like you do as well. I just think it's a time thing. You just have to let him get his guys, let him build his program. And honestly, this year shouldn't even count on your clock. I mean, the things he had to deal with, not having a full recruiting cycle, not being able to have a full spring with his team. I mean, he's basically trying to instill his culture via Zoom. What we're doing right now, I mean, that's just, it's impossible to do. And then you make a mistake here or there and you have to start over. It seems like there's been a couple of restarts with just building trust with the team. And so I think we just, everybody at FSU just needs to take a breath and to understand it's going to happen. It just needs to take a little bit of time. I want to end on a good note with FSU and then let's talk a little bit more NFL stuff. Talk to me about a favorite moment there, EJ, because you were a part of some really good teams. Obviously, you're one of the more decorated quarterbacks that ever played there. You know, I think one of two guys that started and won four bowl games as a quarterback. So really an amazing feat. So is there any memory or a couple of memories that stand out more than others?
I got two for y'all. The first one is Bobby Bowden's last game. I'm a freshman. Ponder's out for like the first, or I guess the last 5 weeks of the season, 4 weeks of the season. We got to win three out of the four to get to a bowl game. We win three out of the four. We play West Virginia in the Gator Bowl. I got MVP, played well. Jimbo called a good game for me. Felt comfortable. Defense played good too. And I think that was the year West Virginia was really good. They had Geno as a backup. So Geno got in. So it was kind of like freshman versus freshman, EJ Manuel versus Geno.
Right.
So handled that. and then I would say the second one that for real, I'll never forget. And you know, I was going to bring this up, E-Mac. The game versus Clemson, 2012. I forgot the exact date, y'all. I can't think of the exact date, but it was such a huge night for me, mainly because Taj Boyd, who's from where I'm from, was Clemson's quarterback. All right. And Taj may not ever say this, but I knew how I was feeling about it. I wanted to beat him. And so, you know, that was for me, like back home, 757 bragging rights. You know,
that's,
I mean,
right.
Virginia, right? And so I was like, man, we got to go out here and beat these guys. And y'all beat us the year before. I was out with a shoulder injury, but y'all blasted us. Well, actually, it was a pretty close game until I think late. But y'all got us at Clemson the year before. And so that was just a huge night. I think I rushed for over 100, threw for over 300. And I felt like that was kind of like a defining moment for me, because when I talk about these quarterbacks that win these big games and these big moments like Ian Book versus Clemson, that's what gets you drafted. That's what gets you in the NFL. Like when they had me going through my combine stuff, they were watching tape from that game. And they want to see you play the best. And at that time, Clemson was the best. Florida State was the best. So it was just a big moment. Kirk Herbstreit was there. It was ABC, you know, Saturday night primetime. It was great. And, you know, it was one of those nights that I'll never forget. Played well. And those are my favorite memories, though.
As soon as I asked the question, I knew one of the memories was going to involve Clemson. And I instantly regretted it, not steering it a different way around the Tigers.
I got to say, you know, when we took down the Tigers, which I'm 2-0 in doing so. You know, it's I'm sure y'all probably Florida State as well, so it's all good.
Mac, but see, that's what I miss, right? And I want to ask you this quickly, EJ. You know, how good is this Clemson FSU rivalry when both teams are really good?
It's amazing, Kelly. I think that's what, like you just said, college football is missing. You know, I feel like we're hard on Florida State because we want them to be good. You know what I mean? Like, as ACC people, as ACC employees, we want to see Florida State be good. We want to see Clemson be good. We want to see Miami be good, our blue bloods. And, you know, I think it makes for great football. It gives us all more attention in the national spotlight. So when Clemson plays Florida State, like in a game coming up, it's more of it's a big deal. It's almost like a Clemson versus Notre Dame, but obviously it's not that case now because of where Florida State is. So, I think, you know, that's something that we all miss, and that rivalry between those two teams. It's funny, too, because Clemson's always been good, and I feel like people have just been like, oh, well, Clemson just – like, dog, Clemson's been good for 20 years. Like, I don't remember a time where Clemson was ever bad. I don't remember. Y'all probably correct me, but I'm talking about when they were like – when they look like Florida State right now. I feel like Clemson's always been solid, and even when, you know, 2009, 2010, 11, they were still good. They may not have won championships, but – like those years when C.J. Spiller and Davis and those guys were there, they were rolling. And then even when I was young, Andre Branch, who was the other D lineman that came out of my class? Oh wait, Bowers, Daquan
Bowers, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they had some beasts on that team, and there's like three or four other guys I can't think of their names, but they play in the league. So Clemson's always been good. Just got to get Florida State back. It'll make it, you know, for a better rivalry.
Yeah,
no we're doubt. Waiting for it. They'll can't wait. There.
E, let's transition, to the NFL real quick. And talking about, you know, being a first rounder, a young quarterback, what was, I guess, the hardest transition for you as going from, you know, being the guy, then going to the NFL and expecting to be the guy or them having those expectations for you to be the guy so quickly and maybe not necessarily having a chance to learn like you would have liked to?
Sure, man. I think that was the biggest thing. He was just getting that chance to, you know, smell the flowers a little bit, enjoy getting drafted early, enjoy the moment, enjoy moving from Florida to Buffalo, New York. You know what I mean? It was a culture shock. It was a place I had never been. And actually, I came there for a visit pre-draft, and I was like, I don't really know if I want to go to Buffalo. You know what I mean? Because it's, like, football was amazing. Like, the facilities was good, but it was more the city. You know, I wanted to go like Miami. I wanted to go somewhere like New York or Atlanta, somewhere where it was like a jumping city.
Right.
And so, you know, I got drafted there. And you know what? It was good because when I did play, you know, I was dealing with injuries my rookie year. Y'all know how that is when you're hurt. But I was playing well. And, you know, if people go back and compare my numbers to most quarterbacks that played 10, 12 games in their rookie year, my numbers are just as good or better than a lot of them, you know. And I felt like my second year, we were 2-2. Most people know the story. I ended up getting benched for Kyle Orton. In the meeting room, Marone was telling me, hey, I want you to take a step back and learn from Kyle, which I'm thinking, okay, that's normal. Like, rookies learn from veterans. And then, you know, he never said that, you know, to the media. And so the perception, which is big in the NFL, was that EJ's a bust, or EJ can't do this, he can't do that. And so it just kind of led on throughout the rest of my career. And I was still able to play three, four more years after that. But you know, I definitely feel like it changed the projection of my league or of my career. And that's what happens in the league to a lot of guys. They kind of put a stamp on you, and it's hard to change that once they put it on you. So my experience was, you know, it was up and down. The things that were down, I learned from and made me a better man. But the good parts, I still, you know, I cherish, and I met some great guys like Eric Wood, still one of my good friends now. Marquise Gill and Robert Woods, those guys are still playing, but like, we're still best friends. So I made lifelong friends in that situation as well.
You bring up E. Wood. We had him on the pod. He was excellent. And we asked him about Bills Mafia and how those people up there are flat out crazy in a good way. Can you just tell us a little more about Bills Mafia?
Bills Mafia is awesome until you lose.
Right.
They're going in on Twitter. They're going in on Instagram. That was the point where I had to take my comments off because I was walking my dog. And they'd be like, yeah, man, walk your dog better, bro. Like, you need to be stuck with my dog. Like, it's
oh, my gosh.
And it's like a Tuesday at like 10 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Just so
they're crazy.
They're extreme. But I will say they were good fans. Like, they, you know, some of them were really nice and show love, you know, even considering what I went through. And definitely even now that I don't play for them no more, like a lot of them, you know, have been like, hey, man, wish you had more of a shot, blah, blah, blah. So they're good fans. And I know they're happy now because the Bills are doing great. And obviously Josh Allen is playing great too. So they're embracing him. And it's good to see because you can tell Josh fits in that Buffalo mold. I think he's from Montana or wherever.
Wyoming, yeah. That like fits. That.
And to be honest, that's kind of what Buffalo is. It's a small town and it's a small community, you know, and, you know, it fits his, it fits where he comes from.
Yeah, no doubt. E, man, this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you making some time for us, coming on the podcast. Really appreciate your time, my man.
Yeah, E, Matt, Kelly, thank y'all so much for having me. I know Clemson's probably going to thump Florida State, you know, this coming weekend, but y'all still be my friend after the game, so it's all good.
EJ, just know that I don't want it this way, okay? Just know that. Just know that.
I've done it, but
EJ, I've done radio shows during Clemson Florida State week where, and doing the on the flagship station for Clemson, and someone would just call in, and they would call, and I'd be like, "Good afternoon, the Roar," and all I would hear was dun 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 dun, and they would just start playing the fight song and just say nothing. Like that's how it used to be, and it will get back there, and we can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's gonna take a year, 2-3 years, but it'll get back. So I appreciate that, Kelly. You made me feel a little better going into this week.
I got you, EJ. I got you.
No doubt. Well, thanks again, my man. We really appreciate it.
All right, y'all. Anytime.
What an awesome interview with EJ Manuel. I love that you and him, Mac, have become such bros. And it's so good to have EJ on.
He's my guy. He's my brother from another. It's been a lot of fun just doing different things with him. Obviously, we haven't been apart, but doing a lot of fun segments with each other. And he's just a cool guy. So appreciate him taking some time out of his busy day to sit down and talk some quarterbacks, some ACC, a little bit of NFL with us. It was a lot of fun.
It was. And as always, we actually just mentioned this as we're recording because we're so thankful for our producer, Richmond Weaver. He produced these podcasts. He does a great job. If we mess up, he just goes boop boop and he fixes it. It's like magic.
It's like magic.
Yes. You'll never know that we had a pretty funny blooper earlier, but you don't get to hear it. I'm sorry. But check out his podcast, Rich Take on Sports. Anywhere you get your podcast, he interviews a bunch of great guests. Mac and I have been on there and a bunch of other more important people. So go listen to Rich Take on Sports wherever you get your podcasts. Mac, ACC. It's time for our ACC of the week. And I'll kick us off here. My athlete of the week is Ben Skoranek from Notre Dame, the big wide receiver. He's got some serious size and we saw him play pretty well against Clemson. He also had a really good game against Pittsburgh early in the year. But this past weekend, 5 catches for 63 yards against Boston College. And you might think, okay, Kelly, 5 catches, 63 yards. Why is he your player of the week? That's a very good outing. 3 tutties, as Mac would say, 3 touchdowns. And he was their go-to guy in the red zone. They did a lot of back shoulder fades. They threw it up to him and he went and got it. I did think it was kind of funny that he got a unsportsmanlike on that first one because I feel like he didn't really even taunt the guy.
He might have said something. I thought that too. When I saw it, I was like, that's a little over the top.
It was kind of weak.
Yeah, I thought so too. But I mean, seeing Ben really become the go-to target, you know, for Ian Book, it's been really impressive. The trust that those two have built just over a very short amount of time, it's really impressive to see. So interestingly enough, those guys, of course, could come back one more year. I'm sure they're going to the NFL, but that could be a duo to watch if they had a full another year together. Kelly, my athlete of the week, this guy, if he hasn't won every award possible, throw the awards away. Sam Howell just went nuts. He threw 45 passes, completed 32 of them. That equals about 71% completion rate, 550 yards, 6 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. And oh, by the way, he just led his team back to a 28 points in the fourth quarter, was down 21. Sam Howell is on another level right now. You look at his two past games, that makes up for most people's half a season or even whole season, and he's done it in two games.
He was ridiculous. And I love your gif, Mac, where you were wheeling the trophies over, like you were going to just bring over all the trophies. Insane numbers for North Carolina. And actually, perfect segue, Mac, because my coach of the week in our C of ACC, our first C, is Mac Brown. Not you, Mac. Mac Brown. And, you know, some may say, okay, Kelly, well, he didn't coach much defense. Yes, I understand that. Wake Forest also played really well in the first half. Let's give Wake some credit. Sam Hartman was dialing it up in the first half. And so why I'm giving Mac Brown credit is when your team's down 35-24 at half, when you get down 21, when you need that kind of comeback against an in-state rival, and you've had games this year that you've lost in just the most brutal of ways, I don't know what Mac said at halftime, but it worked. And so I'm giving Mac Brown and his coaching staff credit for not letting his guys give up, for allowing them to have that confidence to stay in the game and to come back and win it. And as much as we want to rag on the defense, they only gave up 18 points in the second half, which only, that's, you know, better than most. In the fourth quarter, though, they were really good. They were really good. So the adjustments that they made defensively and just coming back from that kind of deficit, Mac Brown is my coach of the week.
A true representation of bend, don't break. You know, just give up 50, you know, 2 points and we'll still find a way to win. So 53. So my coach of the week, you talk about finding a way to win that game, and maybe last year UNC would have lost it. This is very applicable to this coach as well. Manny Diaz, Miami. If this was a year ago, Miami is not beating Virginia Tech the way that they did. They got down early. Their quarterback, you know, struggled some, you know, looking at different things, especially when we see the expectations. Only averaged 6.7 yards of completion compared to a week ago where he was averaging close to 20. But for to go on the road, Coach Diaz to will his team back to victory, beating Virginia Tech as an underdog. You know, again, I said it earlier, Miami loses that game if it is a year ago. And you look defensively at what Miami was able to do. They sacked the quarterback six times, a very mobile quarterback in Hendon Hooker, had like 11 or 12 tackles for loss. But the biggest thing here, and I understand that, you know, Khalil Herbert was injured and you know, maybe fighting with that hamstring. He still rushed the ball eight times. They held Virginia Tech to nearly 120 yards below their rushing average. So really did a great job defensively. Manny Diaz, my coach of the week.
Completely agree. They had guys out to COVID too. I saw the report saying, you know, we were on the brink of not playing.
Yeah, I think 11 to 13-ish guys out, which again, Virginia Tech's looking at you like saying, we don't care. Because they actually, I think they had about 11 guys out too, but it just goes to show you how crazy this season has been.
And I'm so glad we got to see that game because it was a heck of a game. So thank you, Miami and Virginia Tech, for pushing through. I know some guys maybe had to play some extra snaps, but you guys did it. My craziness of the week, Mac. I'm going to take a deep breath here. Okay. I was watching Notre Dame Boston College, and I wasn't that person who was saying, oh, BC's going to cover Notre Dame's nothing. No, I was not saying that. I have a ton of respect for Notre Dame and what they've done.
You were saying, BC, I am done with you.
Yes. I officially broke up with Boston College. Don't ever try to call me again, Boston
Maybe
College.
Come back.
Don't ever. No, it is over. We are never, ever, ever getting back together because, guys.
It's a Taylor Swift song, I think.
And she's the queen. Notre Dame freely gave you the ball three times in super advantageous situations, super short fields. And all you guys could muster from three fumbles is 6 points. 6 points.
Wild.
Guys, Notre Dame was doing everything possible to keep BC in that game. If Notre Dame had done that against Clemson, it would have been an absolute rout. And they're not going to do that against Clemson. They're going to be fine. They're going to handle the ball better. But I just couldn't get over how freely Notre Dame was just handing the ball over to Boston College. And they couldn't do anything about it. So that's my craziness. Three fumbles for Notre Dame, only 6 points off of turnovers for BC.
And you talk about the difference in the game. Notre Dame forced two turnovers and scored 14 points. So that's the swing you're talking about, being able to really capitalize.
And you had one of the fumbles in this had to have been maybe still the second quarter, but BC recovers the ball and then BC just snaps it right over Jerk's head. It was ridiculous.
It's hard to win those games, nearly impossible, especially playing the number two team in the country. All right, that's a lot of defense for me, Kelly. We talked about a defensive coach. We talked about turnovers, defenses creating turnovers. So I'm going to fix all of that with a huge offensive stat here for you. UNC, Wake, 112 combined points, 1,348 yards, 174 plays. It was my kind of game. I'm going back again and just watching this over and over because it was a perfect football game and no one else can tell me otherwise. My dad is sick to his stomach listening to this right now. He's a defensive guy, but that was how all football games should be played. Big comebacks, a lot of yards, great players making huge plays. I absolutely loved it, Kelly.
I'm not sure that's how all football games should be played, but
break every record ever.
It was highly entertaining. I will say that. I enjoyed it very much. And I thought Wake was going to win it. I picked Wake just to kind of go crazy in our radio station pick 'em contest. Mac, I know you picked Wake. If you have no comment, that's fine.
I was a little upset about it. And why I chose Wake, if you listen to this podcast, if you see me tweeting, you know I'm very confident in UNC's ability, especially on offense. But I picked Wake because I thought I would be able to make up some ground in the huddle pick 'em. And news to me, everybody picked Wake. So it was a stupid pick. We look dumb on TV. UNC fans are screenshots of us all picking Wake and saying, you guys are so dumb. And I said, yeah, we are. We don't know what we're talking about. And we just look silly. So anyway, guys, thanks for bearing with us as we rant right there. It was a really fun episode. Big thanks to EJ Manuel again joining us. He's the man. If you check him out on In Play, on The Huddle, all over social media, he does a great job covering this conference. And if you want to hear more of us, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop a little rating or review. We'd love to hear from you guys. And until next time, we'll see y'all.